The next talk we're going to do is really just an introduction to ASP.NET, Visual Studio 2013, specifically around web tooling. So again, just quick show by hands or plus ones online. How many of us in the room are really focusing primarily on web and web applications or web APIs? Great, so you're at the right camp then, because this is a web camp. Perfect. So I'm Mark Gagne, so I'm a technical evangelist like John here with Microsoft, whereas John works for our corporate folks down south. I actually work for Microsoft Canada. There's my email, mark.gagne@microsoft.com, and my Twitter account at mark_Gagne. And if Jonathan's online, which he is, he'll know that if you want to get a hold of me, actually Twitter is far better a way to get a hold of me than my email. So we've gone through the keynote with John. I'm now, as I mentioned, going to talk about this introduction to ASP.NET, and then you've seen the rest of the schedule here. So we've got another talk after this before we take a break. So quickly what we're going to do is we're going to talk about what was released recently, both in 2012.2 and in 2013, and actually some releases in between those. We'll talk about how quickly the new cadence is from our developer tools team. We're going to talk about this concept of one ASP.NET and what does that mean and why do you care. We're going to talk about Visual Studio 2013 and Web Essentials. Anybody actually using Web Essentials, VS Web Essentials right now? Wow, awesome. Yeah, wow, okay. You are? Well, I certainly hope so. So we're going to talk about that. It's a really, really great bit of kit that you can introduce into Visual Studio as a plugin and just makes doing web development so much better. And finally, what's actually new in ASP.NET, really at a bit of a high level, because as you're going to see, there's a lot of new stuff out there. So I talked quickly about the cadence. For those of you who've been doing this for a while, you'll know that back in the day, you could wait years between major releases from us on Visual Studio or our technology stacks. And you're seeing that there's a much, much faster cadence now coming from our developer division team. And this is really to kind of match you, the developers here, who are also iterating faster and building more and building quicker and needing more tools and more frameworks and more features to enable the great things that you're building. So in September 2012, we launched ASP.NET 4.5 along with Visual Studio 2012. Then in February, we did a fairly big update to ASP.NET, introduced a lot of new features we're going to talk about, as well as some new web tooling in a 2012.2 release of Visual Studio. And actually between February and October, there was a number of minor revisions as well to Visual Studio. I think we were saying like another two or three minor releases. Yeah. Yeah. And then just this October, we launched Visual Studio 2013. How many are currently running 2013? Good amount. Most of us probably then on 2012 still. Okay. Updating to 2012.2 and 0.3.4, hopefully, because it does introduce a lot of great things. We just had a comment online. Mads is a genius. Mads Christensen is the developer in charge of VS Web Essentials. It's his project that he's heading up. It's truly fantastic. We're going to talk about that a little bit more. So in 2012.2, we introduced a lot of really great things, including a whole new template system for web forms, introducing a lot of new HTML5 markup and templates and frameworks that we're going to show you. We had the launch of SignalR, which is a really great communication system between using WebSockets and then downgrades to various other technologies to communicate between the client and the server. We got Web API and now Web API 2, and MVC, where you can create any type of MVC application you want, including templates for creating Facebook applications or single-page applications or SPAs. And if I recall correctly, when we did a poll earlier, I think the majority of us are using MVC over web forms, I think. Yeah, probably. In the web tooling side of things, anybody here use Page Inspector before? Any idea what that feature is? I'm not going to lie, I had to look it up myself. I was actually quite surprised. A really, really good feature. What this does is actually takes the browser and embeds it in Visual Studio and allows you to actually interact between the browser and your code in real time. So you could select an element in the browser, and the corresponding code would be selected. It would actually open up the right file and then highlight the element that you were interacting with in the browser. And does actually a lot more than just that. So it's definitely worth checking out for those of you doing web development. Makes your life a lot easier. And in fact, there's a new technology that kind of extends that even more that we're going to talk about called Browser Link later today. We've also had really, really big improvements in IntelliSense. And to me, IntelliSense really is what sets Visual Studio apart from a lot of the other IDEs or editors out there, is just how extensible the IntelliSense is and just how useful it is. John mentioned NuGet. So the great thing is when you bring in a NuGet package for, say, jQuery, it brings in the jQuery IntelliSense as well, and I'm going to show you how that works. So it makes it a lot easier to see the APIs that are available to you, to see what parameters they take, and to see the documentation as you're coding, so you're not having to switch context and go look things up all the time. We've had a lot of great increases to publishing using WebDeploy, for example, over to Windows Azure. So it facilitates, you know, pulling down your publisher setting files for doing code-first migrations, for doing rollbacks. And you can do this all within Visual Studio, which is really fantastic, especially if you're kind of doing continuous integration, if you're using, say, a cloud-based dev environment or production environment where you're constantly rolling in changes. So it just makes it really, really easy. Is anybody here using WebDeploy right now as their deployment methodology? We got like one, two, a couple of hands. Okay, great. We're actually going to talk about a couple of different ways of doing deployments today, including using Git. Any users of Git or GitHub in the room? Awesome, great. So we're going to talk a little bit about Git later on today. So you might have heard, depending if you watched any of the like the build keynote for the launch of ASP.NET 4.5 or watch any of the other videos that we have online, but you'll hear us talk a lot about one ASP.NET. And what that really means is we've fundamentally changed the way you're going to create new projects when you're using the latest version of ASP.NET. It doesn't change what ASP.NET does, but what it does is it removes this kind of initial fork in the road when you're creating a file new project previously. So previously, you'd go file new project, and then you'd have to make a pretty big decision up front. Well, am I going to do MVC? Am I going to do web forms? Am I going to do web API? Am I going to do Razor? Basically, you had to choose your whole technology stack right away before you've written any code. And if you wanted to add another, say you wanted to do, you know, you were working on web forms, but now you want to do some MVC, well, you had to go and make a new project. Or you had to try to bring it all in, and it was very, very complicated. And this was actually a concern for a number of our users. And what we've done is facilitated this kind of file new project experience. We'll show you that in just a minute, but now there's really one project type. And you can bring in any of these technologies, be it web forms, web API, MVC, into that project and mix and match as needed. So if you have the need to have, say, an MVC front end and maybe a web forms administrative view, maybe throw in a little web API in there for some single page application goodness, you can do that all within the same project. But it's not just our technologies. You can actually introduce your own technologies as well and bring those all into the same project, creating the sites and services that you want to build, all in the technologies you want to use, all sitting on top of ASP.NET. So as I mentioned, if I can zoom in here. This is the new template selector. So I'm going to show you in just a minute, when you create a new project, you have one project type, but then it asks you what type of template would you like to start with. And this is a starting point. You can always add on top after as you're developing. So let me show you real quick about this one ASP.NET concept by going over to my dev box here. And I'm simply going to start by launching Visual Studio. And I'm just going to bring up new project here. So as you can see, under web, there's now just this one project type, ASP.NET web application. Unlike with Visual Studio 2012 projects where you had a whole host and you had to choose what version of MVC, what if you wanted web API, whether you wanted to do web forms or not, you can now simply just select you're wanting to build an ASP.NET web application. Now, from here, you do have to make a bit of a choice. This is just the initial choice. Do you want to start with a completely empty project? Do you want to do web forms? Do you want to do MVC, web API, so on and so forth? So I'm going to choose web forms just to get started. But I'm also going to go down here and say add folders and core references for both MVC and web API. So this is just going to bring in all the references and the structure for the ability to use these technologies should I need to use them in the future. Also quickly just going to mention some changes to authentication to make authentication a lot easier and a lot better to use. You can quickly move from using individual user accounts where you can actually store that locally in your own SQL database or use an OAuth providers like Facebook or Twitter or Google or Microsoft. You can use organizational accounts, which allows you to hook up to an Active Directory on-premise or in the cloud or even using Office 365 or Windows Azure Active Directory. And, of course, you can do traditional Windows authentication for your intranet-type applications. But we're just going to leave that alone for now. So while this creates, one thing I want to mention is, as I mentioned earlier, that we've actually changed the templates that we are now building. So if you've done this before, as I'm sure you have, you're kind of familiar with the default application that is built for you when you choose to use one of these templates. It wasn't bad, but it's gotten a whole lot better. I'm just going to go ahead and launch this now so you can actually see what I'm talking about. So hopefully this looks a little bit cleaner than the previous template projects that you're used to. This is actually now using Bootstrap as our CSS framework, which brings in a whole host of really great HTML5 and CSS3 goodness, including full responsive layout. You'll notice if I make this smaller, the header now moves to a dropdown without us having to change any code. When it's at full width, we have three columns here. But as I shrink it down, it moves to a single column. And if I shrink even more, it'll start even changing font sizes and the layout even further, giving us this really nice responsive UI. And this comes basically for free by leveraging Bootstrap and by leveraging their 12-column layout. So one of the kind of conventions over configuration that Bootstrap brings in is the ability to lay your views out using 12 columns. And you can span them as needed. So in this case, we have three columns. So that's, you know, a span of four. And by using media selectors, we can say when the browser width is too small, change those to a stacked model rather than an inline model. So,
Mark,
yes.
Could you just confirm? I think I know the answer, but just so everybody else is aware, using Bootstrap 3, right, in the latest?
Yes. And Bootstrap 3, anybody use Bootstrap right now from Twitter, the Twitter Bootstrap project? A good number of you. Then you'll also know that there was a huge, huge improvement between Bootstrap 2 and Bootstrap 3. Big fan of Bootstrap. I've done a lot of web development over the years. Definitely worth checking out. You can go to getbootstrap.com to learn more about Bootstrap and to download it. And we're actually going to show you how you can even use NuGet to install it. Was there a question? I heard, you know, a mic turning on. Yep, back there.
Yeah, I think Bootstrap is great, but the template seems also tied to another technology called Knockout, which seems force me to use Knockout if I want to customize this template.
Want me to answer?
Sure.
Yeah. So Bootstrap itself has no relation to Knockout. Mm-hmm. It doesn't require Knockout at all. Actually, Knockout is not a requirement of anything in the File New Project experience.
Yeah, but it's in for this template.
I'm happy to look at it with you at the break. There's nothing in Bootstrap, because actually, as he was saying, Bootstrap is from Twitter, and so I'd be happy to look at it with you. In fact, we have demos. You'll be doing a demo using Ember.js later, so there's no kind of requirement on Knockout here.
Yeah, so the technologies that we now have incorporated in this new HTML5-based template is Bootstrap, Modernizer, jQuery, as well as the CSS Reset Framework. That name is currently escaping me.
Modernizer,
thank you. So we do have tutorials that uses Knockout.js. We're even going to talk about Knockout.js, but that's not a requirement at all. You're welcome to use any framework you want, be it Knockout, Ember, Angular, any of those. So, okay, so just moving on here. So really, really great, nice, simple template for you to get started with. And as you can see here, if I pull up default.aspx, we are indeed working with a web forms application. And we can see here that we're using some of the CSS classes brought in by Bootstrap. So we've got a row class, we have a column that spans four, and so on and so forth. So I want to show you just how easy it is to go ahead and actually inject some MVC into our web forms app. So I'll start that by going into our models folder. And we're going to go ahead and add a class, and we're going to do the overused person demo, and we'll simply just add some properties here. So int id, we'll add a property for string name, and we'll add a property for int age. Perfect. So you're also seeing some new features in here of Visual Studio, which shows you your reference count to a given class into a given property in a class. Right now, since we're not using it, we have zero references for it. So if you're looking at some code that's actually in production or that's been finished and it's got zero references, you might want to rethink why it's in there.
Can you
I was just going to ask that. It's a silly question. Can you turn those
yes.
Annoying when I want to take a screenshot for a blog or something.
Yeah, absolutely. I do believe if you go into Quick Launch here and type reference, there's a way to change that in your text editor, IntelliSense References. And I believe I can turn this off somewhere in here. I will find that. I'll find exactly where you can turn it off for you and show you how to do that. Okay, so now we have our model. I want to show you one of the new features called scaffolding. So what scaffolding allows me to do is take my plain old C# object or my POCO object and convert it into a controller and to a set of views related to that model. So we'll start here by going into the controllers folder. And we're going to go add, and this time we're going to choose new scaffolded item. So we can choose what type of scaffold we want to create. I'm going to start by creating this MVC5 controller with views using Entity Framework. And we'll give it a name, so we'll call this MVC Person Controller. You have the option to use asynchronous controller methods. I highly recommend you use asynchronous methods basically whenever possible. This just makes everything just gravy. We choose what model we want to base this on, so we're going to choose our person model, and finally what data context we want to use. I'm going to go ahead and create a new person context. And after that, we just hit create, and what this is going to go ahead and do, as the name scaffolding in the progress bar implies, is go and create a controller that's going to have all the routes and all the actions required for that model, and also include all the different views for your create, retrieve, update, and delete requirements. So what we can see here now is we're in our web application that has a person controller. It's declared our person context, and we have a set of routes. For those of you not familiar with MVC, John's actually going to do a deeper dive into what MVC is and explain these things like routes and actions. But suffice it to say, it's really just mapping of a URL to a given controller and to a given action. So in this case, with /MVC person, that's going to go to the index action. That's going to query our people list and return the appropriate view. When you request a specific person by its ID, it will return the appropriate view for that. And if we pop over into our views folder, we can see that it actually created the create, delete, details, index, and item views. And these are all using the Razor syntax. And all, again, once again, using the Bootstrap framework, CSS framework. So we'll compile that. We'll go ahead and run it. And we'll just wait for that to load. And we can see that we can go ahead now and start creating our item. So I'm Mark, I'm 32, and we'll go ahead and add John. But since he told me how old he was yesterday, I'm not going to use his real age. I'm going to say he's also 32. And we'll add our good friend Andrew here, who we turn is actually younger than us, who's 29. So, I mean, it's really easy. You know, if you have much larger models, more complex models, you can actually adapt the views as needed. It also gives you the ability to go ahead and delete items or look them up, look up their details. Again, this is all using Bootstrap, very easy to change the templates. And so you can see that not only do we have MVC, but we still have our web forms working just fine. And we can take this even further and use a scaffold to go ahead and create a web API if we want. So again, back into this controllers, going add, going new scaffolded item. Now we'll choose web API to controller with actions, once again using Entity Framework here. We'll call this API person controller. Continue using asynchronous. We'll use our person model. Crazy people outside, always fun. We're going to reuse our person context as our data context and hit OK, or rather hit Add. What this is going to do, once again, is go ahead and scaffold out a web API for us based off of that model. So you can see the routes is now /API/API person. This is going to return the people array. /API/API person 5 is going to return a specific person. And what this will do is actually return data based off of the accepted type. So if the request says, I want JSON back, it's going to send JSON back. If the request says, I want XML back, it's going to return XML. So we'll go ahead and compile that. Yeah. And now that it's built and it succeeded, I'm actually going to launch into my Git bash here. It's going to give me access to something called curl or CURL. And that's just going to allow me to make a simple web request. So let me just pull out my root URL here. I'm going to call curl paste slash API person. Hit enter. I'll zoom in here so you can actually see what's going on. It's just JIT compiling right now. And what you should see is the JSON that's returned, including two elements, the one for myself and the one for John. I can change this request to say slash one. Let me just zoom out so you can actually see that. And that's just we're going to turn the JSON for mine. If I select this and pop it over into a browser, like, say, for example, Chrome, which by default will actually make the request saying I accept XML back, you'll see that actually returns XML here. You can actually install various plugins to change this default to JSON, so you can actually see the nice formatted JSON back. So it was just that easy to go ahead and actually create a web forms project, to create a MVC project, and to create a web API project, all using scaffolding and just using plain old C# objects and entity framework. Any questions on that before I move on?
Yeah, Mark.
Yes. Oh, wait.
Go ahead.
Yes, you, sir.
Can we go back to the web API code?
I absolutely can. If I figure out what button to press.
Is that under any scenario we should choose using async or depend on what kind of scenario?
Oh, so why would the question was would you choose async versus not using async?
Yeah, do we need to differentiate or are we always using async?
You don't have to use async.
No, go back to the code behind the web. API code. Yeah, can you zoom up?
Yes. So because I selected to scaffold out an asynchronous controller, this is now using the async and await syntax.
Yeah, the second is async, but the first one is not async. So do we need to also convert the first one to async as well? Get people.
That's a great question. Why isn't the default route that returns the list of people contacts not asynchronous?
So we have a whole session on web API later today, so I'll talk about that then. Because he's got a lot to cover in this session, okay? Good
okay.
question, though.
That's a great question. We'll take note on that and answer that. And we have an online question as well.
No, it's not. It's my own question.
Yep.
Scaffolding is great. When's it coming for web forms for us dinosaurs that still use web forms?
Go ahead, John.
I keep muting because I don't want to cough or whistle or something. But there was actually a preview of it in the preview releases. It's expected for the first update for 2013, but it's definitely high on the list. Mm-hmm. Part of the thing, the scaffolding engine, is that it's built so that it's extensible and relatively easy to add new scaffolders mm-hmm. on. So not only can the web forms devs do it, but also you could scaffold, .NET Nuke stuff or whatever, right?
Yeah. Cool. And just real quickly, we kind of sometimes poke fun at web forms, but it's still a very much first-class technology at Microsoft. It's very highly supported. There's a lot of really fantastic third-party controls out there for web forms, so it's still very much a very viable option as a technology stack to build your web applications on. And what I love is that all these new features that we're building are coming to both of these stacks.
Can I rudely interrupt just for a second? If you're doing a lot of web forms development and you're not taking advantage of all the huge features we added for 4.5, you're really missing out. Mm-hmm. So we added in model binding and strongly typed data controls. So who here is doing web forms development and using model binding and strongly typed data controls? That is heartbreaking. Seriously, you got to look into this. What's really cool about it is it brings the same pattern of development, the MVC style of development, to web forms controls. And that buys you a lot of things. You'll see that when I go through the web forms demo. But really what it does is it allows you to, instead of writing control event code that kind of you can get kind of a spaghetti code situation, it's hard to separate things out, you can instead say this grid grid view or whatever, gets its data by calling this method. And that method returns an iQueryable. And if you look at that method, there's nothing in there that's specific to that control. All it does is provide data as an iQueryable. What's great is that same code could be in a service that works with MVC, Web API, whatever. It can be unit testable. It's easy to refactor and all that. So you really, really, and I'd be happy to show, I've got some cool demos of this. I'd be happy to show it all to you during a break or whatever. If you take nothing away from this today but that in your WebForms dev, you really have moved up a level. It's really cool stuff.
Great. Perfect. Thanks, John. I want to talk about some of the new core ASP.NET features. You've heard us go on and on, rather gushingly, I suppose, about Bootstrap templates. We're big, big fans of it. We're mostly just because we're big fans of HTML5 and responsive web design. So as I mentioned, Bootstrap brings in a whole host of fantastic things, including that column layout, but also responsive images for scaling images down as required, for facilitating media selectors so that you can actually target different size devices, be it phones, tablets, desktops, multi-monitors, TVs, what have you. It's definitely worth checking out. Bootstrap also brings in some CSS themes. And you can actually go to bootstrapswatch.com.
Bootswatch.
Thank you. Sorry, bootswatch.com. What that is, it's a website that has a whole host of different templates that you can use. And there's free ones, there's paid for ones. It'll do certain things like, you know, just change the basic colors. But you'll still very much know that it's a bootstrapped site to completely changing the look and feel, and you really would have no idea that this is actually using Bootstrap. So worth checking out because it really just makes life a whole lot easier. And there's a really great set of tutorials and documentation over at getbootstrap.com. Next, we got scaffolding, as I showed you, so the ability to start with like a model-first approach, code-first approach, defining your models, testing your models, ensuring everything works there in terms of validation and all that, and then from there, scaffolding out your controllers and your views, and as we heard coming soon, that's not just for MVC, that's also for web forms. Really, really great piece of technology. I quite like it. It just makes life a lot easier for me to just kind of focus on my models rather than having to figure out all the routing and URL and matches and attributes and all that. I'm going to talk about Owen a little bit, and then I'll go jump up to identity because they're kind of related. So, Owen is a really interesting technology. You can actually check it out at owen.org. Owen.org is actually the specification. And John, make sure I get this right. Open Web Interface for .NET. Perfect. It's like I was staying up late last night rehearsing this. So what this is, it's a specification to actually take the core ASP.NET, basically from, you have IIS, you have System Web, and then you have the rest of ASP.NET. It's the ability to actually take that and remove it. Remove the dependency off IIS and off system.web. Not that there's anything wrong with system.web and IIS, but now you can self-host, which means you can host out of IIS, in process, or in a Windows service. So for example, SignalR that John's going to be talking about later is actually hosted outside of IIS. You host it in your own process. And this is enabled using Owen. Now this will be shocking, but does anybody here actually know Owen or the Katana project or know anything about what I'm talking about right now? Well, I would certainly hope so. Nobody else. No, it's not too surprising. This is actually some pretty bleeding-edge technology. It's worth checking out. There's actually some great podcasts and videos on our Channel 9 site where you can learn about Owen and our implementation of Owen, which is called Project Katana. And why I'm talking about this is because we've actually, in this release, done a fairly major update to the identity system. It's been rewritten to use Owen, which means it can actually be used outside of IIS, which means if you're working on a SignalR or a web API and you want this outside of IIS, you want to host it in your own process or your own Windows service, you can still use identity. And also by removing these dependencies, it makes it a lot easier to, for example, to unit test. And so you're going to see more and more of these things start, you know, migrating over to the Owen stack, which is just going to make it easier for you to consume, to inject your own middleware into the pipeline. So rather than having specific events that you have to kind of attach to and try to modify, you can actually inject your own code right into the pipeline. So if you want to change the behavior of the way, for example, identity works, Owen facilitates that. Now, we're not going to go too deep in it. I just wanted to really quickly mention it. And if that sounds interesting, check out owen.org and just do a search on MSDN for Project Katana. So next up, we're going to talk about Visual Studio Web Tools. There's been a lot of really, really good updates to Visual Studio for the web developers out there. If you're not currently leveraging them, and by the show of hands we had earlier, it sounds like you're not, please, right now, ignore me completely. Go install VS Web Essentials. Get it at vswebessentials.com. It's going to make your experience just that much better. So what do we have in this update for your web developers out there? We got this technology called Browser Link. We've got updates to the HTML editor. We have the Web Essentials that I've been going on about, as well as this crazy thing called Sidewaffle. So what Browser Link does, it uses SignalR, and we were talking about Page Inspector earlier. Well, Browser Link takes that outside of Visual Studio and allows you to actually use any browser, Chrome, Firefox, Opera, IE, or actually all of them at once, and have a connection between Visual Studio and those browsers. That's done over SignalR. And what Browser Link allows you to do is actually interact with the browser or have the browser interact with your editor in real time. So we can trigger an update in all the different browsers. So if you have, if you're one of those lucky developers that has a nice multi-monitor setup and you got all your browsers on that other monitor, you're not context switching and having to go manually refresh your different browsers. Right within Visual Studio, you can trigger that update. You can also use this to actually do live updates from the browser and have those changes pushed into Visual Studio. You can also use the inspectors built into these browsers to find elements in your UI and have it highlighted in Visual Studio, and I'm going to show you how to do that. As I mentioned, a lot of really great improvements with the HTML editor, with IntelliSense, and with autocomplete, and these NuGet packages for bringing in different frameworks and libraries. Just makes it a lot better experience. I'm going to show you some cool stuff called Zen coding. Anybody here heard of Zen coding before? One, two, awesome. Three, four. Oh, actually good. Well, I was quite shocked by it. I hadn't used it before, and I started messing around with it. It was really, really cool. Web Essentials. You heard me go on about it. Seriously, just go to vswebessentials.com and download it. Done. Sidewaffle. Now, you heard us talk about OneASP.NET and simplifying the file new experience with not giving you too many crazy options and just going to get lost in there. Well, there was a lot of good stuff in there, and what we've done is we've taken that into a project called Sidewaffle. And again, you can go to vswebessentials.com and you'll see a link for Sidewaffle. What this is, it's a plugin into Visual Studio that gives you a series of, you know, scaffolds or templates that you can inject into your project whenever you want. So, you know, we were talking about AngularJS before. If you decide to pull in AngularJS and use this as your client-side MVVM framework, well, you need to get started by creating a controller. Now, you can definitely go to AngularJS, the website, and read up on the documentation, maybe download one of their samples and paste it into Visual Studio. Or you can launch Sidewaffle and say, inject a controller for AngularJS. It's going to template it all out for you and inject it right into your project. It's also got stuff, for example, like, hey, I need a robots.txt file. And it's going to inject a fairly nice, simple one that shows you how to do denied requests to URLs or denied requests to user agents. There's a whole bunch of different templates for different things that you can inject and utilize and then edit. And it's constantly being edited on and revised, and so you should definitely check that one out. So now we're going to do a quick demo of Visual Studio Web Tools here. Let me just get set up first. Any questions on that before I jump over to doing some hopefully syntactically correct live coding? We're good? Great. Okay. So I've just opened a geek quiz project. If you've watched many of our videos online on ASP.NET or Channel 9, you might be familiar with geek quiz, or if you've seen Scott Hanselman do this presentation before, this should be very familiar to you. We're actually going to use this as kind of a base project for the rest of the day for various demos we're going to do. So from here, I'm just going to go ahead and pull up the index.cshtml file. For those of you who aren't keyboard junkies like I am, where I'm big on, you know, shortcuts, what I did was hit control comma, and this just allows me to quickly jump around files. Okay, so if I launch this application here, you're going to see there's not a whole lot going on. It's actually basically got a header title, I believe, and that's about it. Or it's going to blow up because I've probably got an existing database that I should have been deleted at 2 o'clock in the morning last night when I was doing this. Bear with me for just one second as I reset this.
Would it be possible to actually increase this font size?
Absolutely We'll do that right
now. Some of
now.
Us older people can't see the screen that small.
Let me do that for you. Boop. Is that a little better? Fantastic. Okay. Now, this should work a little bit better, hopefully. There we go. Okay. Not a whole lot going on in here. We got a box, we got a title, nothing too fancy. So we need to start coding this out. And we're going to add a couple of buttons for our answers. Now, before we do that, I actually want to show you some really great code for Zen coding. So if you don't know about Zen coding, you can check it out at ak.ms/zencoding. And Zen coding is not a Microsoft technology. This is actually it's an open source project out there on the web. You can check it out on GitHub and check out the specification for it. And really what it is just to simplify the creation of HTML. So just give me enough room here so you can see what's going on. All right, so I mean, at its core, I can just type div and hit tab. All right, that's not too exciting. I can go div hash foo. And if you're familiar with CSS, you know that the hashtag is the CSS selector for ID. So now if I hit tab, it's going to create me a div with the ID of foo. Or if I go div hash foo dot bar, knowing that dot bar is the class name, it's going to go ahead and create a div with the ID of foo and the class of bar. All right, so that's kind of interesting. But what if I want three of those? Or three. Well, now I've got three simply by going multiplying it by three. Or if I want each one of those divs to contain a paragraph, and I want each one of those paragraphs to contain some lorem ipsum text. So now I've got my three divs with a paragraph containing lorem ipsum text. But it's actually got a lot of lorem ipsum text, so maybe I only want five words. So I just put five at the end of it, and now we've got some lorem ipsum text with five words. You can do some pretty interesting things here. I can take, for example, an unordered list with list items. I can have five list items. In that list items, I can have an anchor. In that anchor, I can have an href. In that href, I can link to, section dollar sign, where dollar sign is a syntax for our iterator variable. You'll see in just a moment, and then I'm going to give it some text, and I go link to dollar sign, and let's do that, hit tab. So now we see ahref, hashtag section one, link to one. You can pad these. You can go dollar sign, dollar sign, dollar sign. Hit tab, link to 001, 002, 003. So just really easy way to go ahead and kind of start quick creating elements using Zen coding. So for those of you who hadn't seen Zen coding before, do you think this is something useful that you can actually utilize as you're building out your web applications? Kind of, maybe, sort of. All right, cool. I like it. I think it's really neat. You're going to see me kind of using these shortcuts throughout these projects. In fact, I'm going to do it right now. So I want some buttons for my quiz, right? So we have the quiz title, but we don't have any buttons yet for the answer. So I'm going to go button. I'm going to use the button class as part of Bootstrap. I want large buttons, so dot button large. I want these to be info buttons. I think those are blue. And I want to apply the option CSS because that's going to make it single select. So if you have four buttons in a parent element, when you apply the option CSS that comes in from Bootstrap, it says only have one active at a time. And I'm going to give it the text by using these braces and say answer, dollar sign. And I want four of those. And I can't spell. Answer, dollar sign, tab, save, refresh. Boom, we got answer one, answer two, answer three, answer four. And if I click on answer one, it's blue. It's kind of hard to see, but it's actually changing and having a single active element. So let's go ahead and further customize this, but rather than me constantly going back and forth, let's actually show you some of this browser link stuff. Now, this is going to be a little funky because I don't have the screen realty that I'm used to, but what I want to show you is up here, by default, you know, when you control F5 or if you have F5, it's going to launch your default browser, and you can change that to any browser you want. What you can now do is you can say browse with, zoom out here, and I can go ahead and select Chrome and Internet Explorer. And I've actually also got Firefox, and you can do Opera, and you can do actually mobile emulators as well. So if you have like an iOS emulator or Android or Windows Phone emulator, you can use those as well. And I'm going to go ahead and hit Browse. And what this is going to do is going to go spin up both of those for me. And I will do my best to try to fit this legibly on this screen here. That'll kind of do. Okay, so now, maybe instead of question title, I want to have the text, this is the question title. Now, I could go and tab over an F5 on both the browsers and refresh it, or I can simply now just use this little refresh option up here that's part of Browser Link. That Browser Link knows that there's two connected browsers now, and this is using SignalR to communicate back and forth. And if I just simply hit refresh, we'll see that both browsers update. That's kind of cool. Hopefully. Maybe. All right. Yay! Okay. So, next cool thing you can do is actually bring up the Browser Link dashboard. And this is going to show you which browsers or emulators you have connected. And then from here, you can actually issue commands over to them. So I can tell Chrome to, for example, go into design mode. So you'll notice here that I can now, let me hide this so you can actually see what's going on here. As I mouse over elements here on the right, the corresponding element in Visual Studio is selected. And I can do this in IE as well. I can either trigger it from the browser, or trigger it from Visual Studio, or within the browser itself, I can just hit Control, and now that brings up this little toolbar at the bottom, and I can say go into design mode, and I can do the same thing here, where it's selecting the appropriate element in Visual Studio. So I can see that if I zoom out here, when I select this div, that this is using the class front. So if I pop over into our style here, or what's my CSS class here? Not Bootstrap, site.css, thank you. And I pop over to .front. I can see that, yep, it's got a 5-pixel border, and it is indeed quite blue. Maybe I don't like blue. But maybe I don't know every hex color off by heart, or I'm not familiar with my entire RGB color scheme. So I can simply start by hitting hash, and that's going to bring up the color selector now. So some of the improvements we have to the editor also include kind of like contextually aware helpers. So it knows that the border CSS has a color option, so it'll introduce this color selector, and I can just pop this down, and I can choose, you know, maybe a different blue, a lighter blue, or gray. Yeah, let's go with gray. Hit save, and then we can just refresh both the browsers and see that that's updated. Okay, maybe that's not very pretty, so we're going to just go back. And you'll see that that's been updated now. Another really interesting thing I can do, this one's kind of cool, it's kind of hard to see, so just follow along here. I can tell the browser to go into inspect mode, back into design mode. And if I click on an element that's editable, so for example, this text element here, I can start live editing in the browser and change. Wow. And what that's going to do, if I go now into my editor here, we can see that that paragraph is being updated in real time. Amazing. So this is just using SignalR to communicate my changes up into the editor. And I can just save this here and then refresh Chrome, refresh all my browsers if I have, you know, a couple of them opened. And now you can actually do live editing in your browser. It's going to open the appropriate file. It's going to select the appropriate element and pass up the changes. Any questions on that stuff? Do we think it's useful? Do you want to see more updates to the Browser Link or more demos on Browser Link? We got a thumbs up from the online folks. Fantastic.
Are you guys awake?
Yeah, come on.
Seriously, that's some really cool stuff. I've been a web dev for a long time, and when I saw that, like, my jaw dropped, and I was like, because it's hard to, like, when you're doing, like, you can code away all you want in your editor, but until you see it work in a browser and work in several browsers, you're not really sure, right? And then you go in and you use your browser tools and you edit away, and then you get it working in the browser, and then you have to copy that stuff back. So the disconnect between the two has been really frustrating to me over the years. You got a question? Sorry.
No worries. You got a question?
How reliable is this? This is a very simple page.
Yes.
What if your page is really complex, or lots of HTML and JavaScript? Will it be as reliable as?
Absolutely, because at the core, it's using CSS selectors. So provided you actually have valid HTML, it's going to select the appropriate element. It's no different than using the built-in inspectors in IE or in Chrome, for example, where you can right-click on an element and say inspect. It creates the X path to select that out, or the CSS path to select that out.
Yeah, and even more than that, like internally, and this only works, you don't have to worry about this messing with your code in production. This only happens when you're running localhost and, you know, when there's a Visual Studio's in debug mode and all that. But what happens is actually injecting SignalR, which is a live socket connection between the web socket connection, and it uses source map thing, and it injects all this kind of metadata into the page. So it's actually traced to the exact line of code. Yeah. And so it's even if there isn't like a div, or even if there isn't a class or an ID that would point to that element, it still injects that in there. So it's really pretty intense what they're doing. It's really well thought mm-hmm. through. So
yeah,
I've used it on some pretty complex pages with nested partials and all kinds of stuff, and it follows.
Yeah, actually, John was just showing me a very complex demo he had put together where he selected an element that was actually in a control that had a partial, and it actually opened the right file into the right line of code. It's very, very good. Try it out, and let me know if it doesn't work for you, though. But I'm confident it will. Okay, so quick time check. I got 9 minutes to wrap this up, so I want to show you just a little bit more of what you can do here in terms of IntelliSense and autocomplete.
Quick question, Mark.
Yes.
Is all this in the Express version of Visual Studio Web, or is that required standard or pro?
So what he's showing with Web Essentials doesn't work in Express. However, Browser Link does work in Express. So Browser Link is a feature in Visual Studio, but the Web Essentials is an extension, and that doesn't work in Express.
Another quick question. Would it work for folks using Windows 7?
Windows 7. I don't know if 2013 runs on.
I'm pretty sure it
does. I forget. Does anyone know if 2013 runs on Windows 7?
I'm fairly certain it does.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
I don't even remember. What's Windows 7? Come on. That's like a past life for me.
As far as I know, and don't quote me on this, I mean, there's no dependencies to the underlying operating system. This is just using web technologies like WebSockets, and SignalR is actually a C# code to manage that communication. So this should absolutely work on Windows 7 if you're using Visual Studio 2013 or 2012.2. Question in the back.
excuse me. How many of these sort of features are coming out of the Web Essentials plugin? Is Xen part of?
Xen coding's part of Web Essentials. Browser Link is actually built into Visual Studio 2013.
Thank you.
Great question. Any more?
And to add to that, a lot of the things that sort of debut in Web Essentials end up getting moved in later mm-hmm. into the core. So you'll see a lot of the things that were initially introduced in Web Essentials are now in the core Visual Studio.
Exactly. Browser Link was kind of a side project for Mads Christensen as part of VS Web Essentials. And so you could have used this in previous versions if you installed that. It's now kind of, I guess, been graduated or promoted as a core feature now. So what you're seeing in VS Web Essentials is kind of a glimpse at possible future features.
Just in terms of then the Express issues, mm-hmm. I'm using Visual Studio Express 2013 for web.
Okay.
So I don't know how many people are in the same boat, but maybe you can make a distinction every time you come up with something to make a comment that whether or not it's in that versus Visual Studio full edition or however it's phrased.
Okay. That's a good point. I'll definitely try to make a point of that. So just at a high level, whenever I talk about Web Essentials stuff, that's a plugin, that's an extension, and to support extensions, you need professional or higher.
Yep.
So that won't work in the free edition of Visual Studio Express. Great. And I think, did you have a question, sir?
I think
you're good now? Perfect. Okay. So, real quick, I just want to show you some of the other improvements to the editor here in terms of support for HTML5. So, if I start typing audio, you'll notice this little kind of snippet syntax highlighty thing show up. And I can just go ahead tab, and what that's going to do is actually bring in a sample of how to create an audio control in HTML5, including support for both MP3 and AUG. And this also works for video, so I can just tab and see, here's how you would do an HTML5 video element that includes support for MP4, for WebM, and for AUGV. Now, I'm about to do something, hopefully really quickly, that you should never, ever, ever do. And if you do this, I will not like you. I'm going to show you how to autoplay audio on your website quickly and easily using autocomplete and IntelliSense. So I'm going to insert a little podcast here from Katana, Project Katana. I think I got that. Yeah, Katana. Yeah. I always type Kanata because I'm from Kanata, Ontario. And next, I'm going to actually do this properly and jump out of this section here and go at section scripts. And do some scripting. All right, so again, we're just in the editor here. We're in a script block. It knows that. So if I go document dot, I'm seeing full IntelliSense and autocomplete. I can go get, and it tells me I can do get element by name, by tag name. I can choose by tag name. It says, what tag name do you want? I said, I want audio. Now, at this point, you traditionally, if you're just doing, you know, kind of vanilla JavaScript, you'd assign it to a local variable, get its length, iterate over it. I'm actually going to use some jQuery syntax here. Hands up to show hands, jQuery fans in the room. Awesome, great. Okay, so I shouldn't have to explain this too much. So I'm going to do $, which is the global jQuery function to convert either a CSS selector or an element or an array of elements to a jQuery object, which is now going to give me access to my jQuery methods. We're seeing full IntelliSense for jQuery built in, so I can go each. And that's going to tell me that I've got access to the each function, which takes an anonymous function that accepts the parameters index and element. So I'll do this. Function, index, element, element. Do that. And so now I can simply go element.play. And if I was to launch this, we will very annoyingly play some audio. Don't do this. Please do not do this. But as you saw, I mean, right inside of my CSHTML file, I got full IntelliSense, full autocomplete, not only for the core HTML and JavaScript and CSS, but for actually extensions and libraries that we brought in, such as jQuery as
so,
well.
And then at the very end, he showed us how to make every restaurant website you've ever been to.
Yeah, exactly. Please don't do this. Okay, real quickly, I also want to show you a few more great improvements in Visual Studio here for the web developers out there. So, for example, when I last compiled, it actually brought up this message. It says, SEO, use HTML5 microdata to add semantic meaning to the website. That's because as I'm coding, as I'm editing, it's constantly compiling in the background and keeping track of what I'm doing and telling me that here's an improvement you can make. And I can simply double-click that. It'll prompt me, do you want to browse for a tutorial to learn about this? I don't right now, but you should. Now, another thing I want to quickly show is if I create a form with an input here and we give it the name of foo, I can do something pretty neat. Oh, that didn't quite work. One sec, sorry. Yeah, we'll do it this way. Form, we'll add an input. Type, wow, cannot type today. ID of foo. So now if I go and add a label, we're going to see that it already picks up that I have an input of type foo. And so I can just select that. It's actually really smart. I kind of thought maybe I'll break it. So I'm going to put a div in here, and I'm going to call this div foobar. And now I'm going to add a label and see if it was smart enough to only show me elements that it can be applied to, and it was. It actually is only showing me the foo because it knows that labels can only have a for attribute for input type. So that was actually pretty cool. And I can go and create a second element here, bar, and I'm not compiling. Actually, I haven't hit Control F5 yet. It's actually compiling this kind of in the background. So I can go back here into my label and go for equals, and then see I have both my foo and my bar elements and select those. And there's a whole host of these things, you know, sprinkled throughout Visual Studio Editor for web developers. So that's just a real quick look at some of the great new improvements for IntelliSense. Any questions on that?
That is nice.
That is nice? Thank you. Woo!
Yeah, there we go.
There we go. Seriously, I've been using web development back when Notepad was the best editor, and like I'm loving what I'm seeing here. So as a real quick demo, and the good thing is I'm onto the recap. I think I'm going to be on time. That's good.
That was pretty fast.
That was pretty fast.
Kudos to you, sir.
So, as I mentioned, with OneASP.NET, it's really about building the sites and services that you want using our technologies and your technologies and other people's technologies and ASP.NET all in one project, how you want, when you want to do it. Not just up front where you have to make all those decisions, but throughout the continuous life cycle and iterations of your project. At the core, some of the really important features that we've been highlighting today, Bootstrap, Identity, Scaffolding, Owen, and Project Katana, which is our implementation of Owen. Definitely go check that out. It's, we can do a whole series just on that alone. We talked about BrowserLink, the HTML editor improvements, the Web Essentials plugin that does require Visual Studio Professional or higher, as well as Sidewaffle. And these are just some of the highlights. There's a whole lot more. In fact, I could do a couple of these eye chart type slide decks on all the new improvements with ASP.NET, including cross-origin requests scripting, stored procedures, AngularJS IntelliSense, a whole bunch of other stuff that I can't read up here. But there's a lot of really great stuff in ASP.NET and in Visual Studio. So really, I mean, the goal of this camp is to just kind of plant some seeds of knowledge, and you know, you'll go out and you'll check out some of these additional resources, and you'll try out some of the these hands-on labs and videos, and try it out for yourself, and really kind of see all the new great features that we have here. And that's it. So any questions on that before I pass this back to John? Yes, in the back.
Can you just one more time show us how you initiate a browser link from within Visual Studio?
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so I'm in Visual Studio. I'm going to go, let me just kill the browsers here. And let me zoom in for you. Okay, so up here is where you would traditionally just kind of launch the debugger tied to your default browser, right? So in my case, my default browser is Internet Explorer. But if I use this little drop-down here, I can choose the option to say Browse With. And if I choose Browse With, this dialog box comes up and says, okay, I want to browse with Chrome, or I want to browse with Internet Explorer. And this is if you want to attach browser link to multiple browsers. But if you just want to use the one, simply clicking that launch button will do it. So if I do this, if I hit Internet Explorer and Google Chrome, and I hit down here into Browse, this will go ahead and launch the browsers. Oh, which has... This is why you don't do autoplay audio.
I think you did that on purpose. I think that was on purpose.
Yep.
Can I expand on what you're saying just
yes.
a second? So what he's saying is all true, and when Visual Studio is running that local server, if you open another browser and browse to that same site, mm-hmm. it will attach browser link. And actually, if you hover over that kind of little spinny icon thing, it'll show the connected browsers, the currently connected
yeah.
browsers.
So see here, I have no current connected browsers. I just launched, by the way, the browser link dashboard by choosing this drop down here and saying browser link dashboard. And you'll see at this time, I have no current connections at all. But I can go ahead and load. Let's choose something we haven't used before. Let's choose Firefox. This is always fun, and I have no idea if this is going to work. It should. And we go to localhost 58192, I believe. Nope. What is... I'm sorry.
It's not requiring IIS Express. It will work with a full IIS site using localhost, though, as well. It doesn't require you to be running IIS.
No. So I'm here in Firefox. I just went to my localhost, which is actually on a different port than I thought. And if I jump back to browser link. Now, I didn't launch this through Visual Studio. I just simply opened a browser that I hadn't been using before and connected to it, and it's already got that connection to Firefox, and I still have all the same things. I can invoke inspect mode. So now I'm in inspect mode here in Firefox, and I can click on an element, and then if I go back into Visual Studio, you'll see that that element was selected. Does that help? Great. Perfect. Any other questions?
Just a quick question.
There we go. Hey, yeah.
Anyways, the web essential stuff looks really neat. Great demo.
Great.
Thank you. I have the free version as well, or Express version. Just wondering, I was thinking aloud, the Web Matrix supports extensions, and I believe that the Web Essentials is all open source stuff from Christensen?
Yeah, right? From Mads Christensen, yeah.
Would you be able to...
I don't think
that up together.
So.
Well, you know, I mean, technically there's nothing to prevent you from that, but it's all built using it's a Visual Studio extension. And
okay.
So the code is all out on GitHub, and I've actually spent a lot of time looking through it, but it's very Visual Studio specific. However, he's using a lot of open source libraries and things to do, like that Zen coding and you know, some of these different things pull in different browser technology support. So you could, it's not like a file copy, recompile, it's done, you know. So, but there is some great code there. Exactly. It would, and actually, I mean, you're obviously pretty familiar with WebMatrix, but there are some pretty good extensions already out there for WebMatrix. There's some pretty nice ones. Not at this level, but, you know, some pretty cool stuff.
Okay, so John's going to take over now, and he's going to do his talk on just continuing this, building out these web applications. So whenever you're ready, John, I'll switch over
ready.
To you.
You're good to go? I'm going to start actually on this real quick.
Perfect. So let me just switch over, and you're golden.
Okay, and if you're tired or whatever, hang on. We got a break right after my talk. We're blowing a lot at you this morning. So first, we got two real quick questions. I wanted to answer them while they're still kind of fresh in our minds. So the first question is, how do we turn off that code lens feature if you want to? So what that feature is this kind of thing right here, right there, right? That little zero references and stuff. And that's actually really handy. It's a great feature in Visual Studio 2013. It's called Code Lens. So let me show you how you can do that, and it's also just a good tip to know about. If you go to this query thing here, if I type in lens, right? So there it pops up, it drops me right to it. Now I click on Turn Code Lens On and Off, and it drops me right into this thing, and I can just uncheck it, right? Now also, if I, was just in this dialogue, and I type in lens, it will also take me right to it. So now, of course, the one caveat is you need to know that that feature is called Code Lens, right? So that's the one tricky part. But this is, I think a lot of people don't know about this, that you can search through options here, and you can also use this quick launch. And this quick launch thing will take you to all kinds of stuff. It even searches NuGet packages that are deployed. So that's question number one. Question number two is a great question from over there. It was, why isn't the web API get method async? And I'll be honest, I was pretty sure I knew the answer, but I ran it by the PM for web API just to be sure. And so he verified with me what the answer is. So let's look at the code real quick. We have a whole session on web API later today. So if this is complex, don't worry about it. I just want to, for people that do know what this is, this will be helpful. So if you look here, this was an async controller. And so, here this get with for a specific person is an async. It returns a task. But when we do get for all the people in the database, it's not marked as async. And the reason is because iQueryable is not actually executed. That's a deferred execution. And so because of that, it's not a blocking operation. So there's no gain to marking that method as async, right? Because all this does is kind of pass along this reference to go in and query against that information later. So you could later in the stack, you could mark something that called this as async, but you're not really getting any gains by marking this one specifically async. Does that make sense? Cool.